Hey, all right, so. Then Brian, the VGA adapter.
Thank
all right,
you,
tonight's, now basically, this talk's got to be good, you've been sitting here.
Okay, so here's the deal. 2006, I gave a talk on monowall and pfSense, right? That is pulling machines off the street, building all kinds of networks and routers and having all kinds of fun, and started working with Soperses, and this was the talk back then, monowall and pfSense. Since then, been doing a lot more different networks professionally. I work as a systems administrator. I build and engineer UX systems, networks, all these different things. That includes, in many of the environments that I'm in, a lot of small offices, right? So the surface area of stuff that I've had to deal with is fairly wide, like a lot of sysadmins. All right, I got a bunch of BS at the beginning here. Disclaimer, the presentation you're about to hear contains fictional accounts based on actual experiences. Basically, these aren't the actual networks and some places where I have worked and done that, right? IP addresses and hosting have been changed to protect the innocent. Okay. Views expressed in this presentation are entirely my own, right? Not Nicebug, not my current or former employers, and I'm not a pfSense developer, so I don't represent them either. And then, contrary to that typical Nicebug list and public protocol, I'm going to be talking all kinds of smack on vendors tonight. So then, fourth thing is that, you know, I figured this just indemnifies me if one of those vendors gets really pissed. And then, final disclaimer is that anybody who came to this talk thinking that you can walk with a secure network, I'm a big believer in that firewalls do not equal security. Too dark. Nobody noticed like T-shirt with Bruce Potter from ShmooCon like 2005. They're screaming about, you know, the bow to my firewall syndrome, right? Where you know, network and security people who spend a whole lot of time with a lot of really macho firewall hardware, and then you open a bunch of ports to run your application on the internet, and you get hosed, right? So that's a lot of the perspective that I come from here. So you really, you know, basically that's just kind of my take on it. Okay, so a quick tangent. Of course, it's me. Where are these firewalls and routers, right? They're all over the place. Internet's gotten really big. This is current updated numbers from the last time I've shown some of this. With the number of internet users in the world, it's growing fast, right? Kind of, I always see parallels and like bringing up parallels to urbanism in the world. This is a world population charted against internet users. These numbers are highly questionable, right? they're really, really interesting. But 1.7 billion people, you know, supposedly human beings connecting to the internet, right? And this is all packet switched IP networking, right? Well, you know, wait a minute. There's all kinds of stuff that's IP packet networking that uses the internet today, right? In all these places in the world. I don't know if any of that's being counted. I don't know if that's being overcounted. I don't know. Who knows what's going on? So, you know, this guy's one of those 1.7 people somewhere in rural China. And this is either like the most beautiful, like Nicholas Negroponte is crying, or this dude just rooted Google, right? And they have big firewalls in China. Okay. So, this shows up kind of bad on the screen, but it's this internet map made by this guy Chris Harrison, where he took and traced all these network connections. You can make out kind of the scope of the world. It's a little bright here, and all these points, right, are routers. Everywhere. Routers are in everything. Now this talk, as you can see by the direction I'm kind of going aiming like super scattershot in terms of not knowing exactly what the audience is going to want out of this. Y'all kind of get the stuff that routers run our world. Sysadmins, New York City context is why I'm doing this, another reason I'm doing this talk. This is a wonderful happy day in the sysadmin world. See that uptime?
That's nice.
This environment, this is, you know, system has got all this stuff to take care of. It's all peaceful. It's all serene. Then you have bad days. And you've got all kinds of stuff to deal with that isn't so serene. And you're not thinking about how great your all that uptime is. And everybody is, you know, not happy and smiling in the data center away from your bosses. Go work away from your boss and go deal with something maybe your predecessor left or something you did with them. And, you know, like, it's a really serious. Small and medium businesses around the city, there's a lot of them. They usually have very few sysadmin resources. That means people like us, I'm assuming, a lot of us. Mostly the infrastructure just works, meaning I plug in my, you know, Linksys wireless router and our office has internet, right? And except when it doesn't work. But most of the time it just works. It works and is cool and fine because a lot of this activity is not necessarily made transparent to the users. It either just works or it doesn't. And unless business is infrastructure in New York, technical personnel resources are often focused on really abstract business goals, right? So this is East Coast, man. Move fast. We got to keep up. We got to get to market. We got to get our stuff done. What? We like the networks about to like die and our redundant stuff. What? Just die? Why do we need backups? We got to get this thing out the door. Can't afford that. So. Business ends up stopping, but like really, realistically, this affects everybody in the world. Everyone stops, only network stops nowadays. So, network deployments. If anybody hasn't seen Michael Lucas's Performing an Oil Change, I'm just going to leave it here. Performing an Oil Change at 80 miles an hour, so go find it, Google it. Let me see. So, really looking at this on the ground, a lot of people in the room, some people in the room I know work with a lot of really, really interesting big stuff. Most of the time when I walk into an office, the place where I'm working, that's the internet connection, and that's under the kitchen sink. All right, that's the cable modem. And there's an office full of users using it. And if it stops, the whole office stops working, everybody stops making money. Then they show me the data center. We go, you know, we got all kinds of stuff to do. Okay, so, you know, here's some talking points that you're going to hear just throughout the talk, and if I'm not talking about one of these points that you want to hear more about, just shout out and ask me about the corporate office colo life with PSNs, like working with this stuff in a small business or a medium-sized business. Talk also quickly and safely training junior, senior network administrators. Quote Chris Buechler on this one from his PSD CAN talk. Hey, PSNs is cool. Even if MCSE can go run your network. It's cool. And throw soft things, please. So the other thing I want to do is take the magic and macho out of high availability networking, right? I really want to bring this down to something accessible because sysadmins, where you know you're working in a company where there's two of you, one maybe of you, you deserve to sleep at night too when your router fails, right? So then the networking can also be reliable, securable, understandable, and fun, says me. All right, so PFSense, into fun. Okay, so here's a quick bootstrap. What is PFSense? I got the book up here. I'm going to give it away later. It says what it is. It's a router and a firewall. It's about 4 years old. It's a fork of the Monowall project. There's commercial support available from the guys who wrote it. It's built on FreeBSD, uses open source software. These are two of the authors, Chris Buechler, Scott Ulrich. Very nice guys. They did this talk at BSD Camp. I went through a bunch of their stats from slides that they made. It's really simple stuff. There's four ways you can run it. A live CD, a full install to a hard drive, embedded to a CF card, which like little guys that I got up here, so not much light here, or a USB pen drive or something. I'm going to focus really only on the full install and the embedded install. Those are the two that I really care about, actually. The others are useful. Minimum requirements, CPU, you need 100 megahertz 686 CPU. It's rock this stuff. Yeah, well, I got some right up here.
28 megs.
Yeah. Yeah, with the CF card slot. No, the let me see. So this stuff can run in a really small footprint. Of course, that doesn't apply to everything everywhere. Going green, you can use older hardware. If anybody has questions about recycling hardware and like desktop machines and ceramic stuff, we've done a lot of that over the years. You know, at the end of the day, though, if you got some big scheme to take over the world with all this new gear, power will kill you. So watch it. Anyways, so popular hardware, NICs, Intel Pro 100 and Pro 1000. These are the EM drivers, not the IGV drivers, which we'll talk about later. And there's one guy I would drink in the room who I left some IGV drivers.
I just have one question. The yes. EM driver, is that the EE driver, like the EE Pro?
No,
those are Astros.
See, those exist in the S and the E1000 directory.
Yeah. Okay.
Got it. Okay, so embedded hardware, which I've got some examples of here, PC Engines, Rat, and Alex, so Chris Netcom, Atcom, and then with Mini ITX stuff, there's somebody else in the room who knows a lot about Mini ITX and previously. Most Dell, HP, Compaq, blah, 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 Intel stuff that's common. If it works, if it's in the FreeBSD compatibility list, you're going to have a fine time with it. VMware, the entire product.
What about AMD 64?
No. There is no 64-bit support currently.
Are they thinking about it?
Are they thinking about that? I'll get to that. Can you ask that? Bring it up. Remember to bring it up at the end.
Are the 64-bit machines running on 100
megahertz? Actually, okay, so since there's an interrupt, of course, everybody want to do as many distributions of this as possible, but the PFSense project is more of a gigantic release engineering project than it is like software development project, right? So to manage that is pretty substantial and complex. The amount of gain in terms of the number of users that will really benefit from it in the world is, at this moment, still pretty small in comparison to the other things that we're trying to accomplish. So basically my answer is, I don't know, email Chris Buechler and see what he says. So these are these Alex ports. They're kind of like the Sophises they've got here. They're the cheapest embedded option, $140 US.
Woo-hoo!
Not including the case of the power supply. Not including the case of the power supply, which the case is 15. There you go. That's all for you. So Sophises, you know, they don't come with a case either. This is a 5501, got one up here, the $300. You can get a lot of NICs in these guys, which is cool. All right, so hardware sizing guide, continuing with this. 10, 20 megabit. Okay, cool. Most New York City offices, right? How much throughput are you actually pushing in and out on that, those super janky bonded T1s? Or the, 15 megabit cable connection, commercial class cable connection, or whatever junk ends up in the office? Not that much. The Sophis gear does a terrific, or the embedded gear in general does a terrific job here. If you start going any faster at all, you want to get into, fast network adapters and go towards the gigabit stuff. And faster CPUs. I mean, just in terms, yeah.
Do those numbers include just firewall, or does that include also bandwidth shaping?
Good point. And I'm going to hit that in a little bit. But yeah, what you're going to layer in and the features you're going to use and make use of, most noteworthy VPN, like an IPsec tunnel, or anything doing crypto, heavy, huge rule sets. I'll give a few examples in a second, which you'll see. But just in terms of like talking about scaling, that's a gigabit internet connection. In fatness, the line rounds out, looks like a big pill. 100 meg, 11 meg, just kind of a visual on scaling. And just so you can even get a little bit more out of that and drop the gig out, just so you can see. Scale is a big deal here, right? Feature consideration, let me see, exactly your question. You want to consider what features that you're going to drop in here. You want an IPsec tunnel, you want to push 10 megabit, you want 500 megahertz CPU. That's a rough guide, right? This comes from the developers, right? So use it, like this is all going to vary depending on your application, your environment, what you're doing, how much you get DDoS all day or not, et cetera. Yeah,
Oh, I was going to ask, is it, I know as you said IPsec, is it, does this support the road warrior and the raccoon stuff?
Well, yes, it does, actually. And I'll get to that at the very end. Yes, I'll cram it in. But yes. Harborside Guide, future considerations, large and busy captain portal deployments. Those get kind of costly. Large state tables. Mileage may vary, will vary, definitely. What do they put? Some fun math about one kilobyte per state. RAM requirement, 100,000 states is 97 megs of RAM, blah, 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 blah. You can play with this stuff. They've got a lot of info online and a lot of documentation and a lot of the mailing list. Hardware side of the guide, other things that are like RAM hungry and top snort. Let me see, disk IO example, SQUID. Grimber firewall, what do people typically do with it? Say the PFSense guys. Perimeter firewalls, BGP routers, LAN routers, full-on VLANs, multiple interfaces, WAN router for Ethernet WAN services. So let's get on with the install, right? So the embedded full disk install. Here's the embedded install. It's a one-liner thing. I mean, there's a little more to it, this or that. And if you want to come up after the talk, burn one off here for yourself and take home, put the car in a machine. It's one line, right? You just basically pipe the PFSense image, GZCAT, pipe it to DD, and dump it onto a CF card. That's as hard as this is. You insert the CF card into the embedded machine and power it on. The full hard drive install is a little more tricky. It's got to, you want to hook up a display. You want a VGA port or something. You can also do it from a serial console. That might require you have to go into BIOS and make something happen. So I mean, this is hard stuff, right? Some things about the full hard drive install. Let's just get on configuration methods. So once you've installed it, you can configure it via a serial console, where you will get, let me see how well this ends up looking. Oh, did it just close it all?
Source
map. Yeah. Is it really? There it is. Woo! Are you watching that? Awesomeness! If I had a bunch of gold stars. Yeah, totally. So when I'm talking about configuring, can everybody see that kind of? Is it clear enough?
Sure.
Okay, excellent. You can see there's lights blinking. This 266 megahertz monster is cranking. Yeah, so here's your configuration menu. Right? So they give you this menu that you can, one of the choices is just pop out of this menu into a shell, right? There's all kinds of things you can do here. You can go set your base network interfaces. If you can figure out which network interface is yours, they've got a handy dandy little utility when you're trying to configure your network interfaces so that you can automatically pick them by plugging in a wire and lighting it up and hitting return, and it goes, that's your EM3 interface. Do you want that to be your WAN? Yeah, sure.
So you're setting up Bailey's?
Ostensibly, yeah, it's doing this configuration. I don't know actually if there are aliases or what, but yes.
On some level they are.
Some, yes. Yes, yes. So you can also configure your VLANs from that initial setup as well. Let me see. Then the second method is just to hit the box. If you know which port is going to be your LAN port, which since so many people do this with the embedded stuff, it's pretty well known. The first port is your LAN port. Then you just plug in a patch cable, go DHCP, and ta-da, 192.168.1.1. Does anybody in security in this room or consider this, have an interest? Anybody have any issues with that? Now,
why do you ask that question after the IP address, not admin? That's what I want.
I want because I want you guys to all remember that, so when you come up here after the talk and you play with all the kid, that you can just, you know, do whatever you want.
That's the most common, I guess.
Yeah. And of course, I'm going to take this straight to the office tomorrow, and I'm going to run a network and see how far that I let you all play with, of course, right? All this kidding. Okay, so look, so entering an option, install, this is your install, blah, 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 blah. So some critical recommendations right off the bat, first things you want to do, set your web management interface to do SSL. It's real cute. There's a web GUI part for it. You can load your own certs, or you can auto-gen them. You can turn on SSH immediately if you want to. You do not have to. You can load your own SSH public keys to the web interface as well, and turn off. Done. Oh, cool. So this thing is securable in some very interesting ways.
No Kerberos support?
Oh, you know Kerberos support? I don't know about.
Okay.
Be really straight, I do not know about. We can look it up. We got a book later. So this wouldn't be fair to talk about, and this is going to be this part's going to be kind of one-on-one-y for some for everybody, but this deserves its. You know, huge port. What's firewall? A host-based firewall. And network port hits PF, PF handles and filters all the traffic going in and out to different programs that use the network, right? Then you have a network firewall. In order to do network firewall, bridge something, either a bridge or routing, you have to have two interfaces, and the packet filter sits between the two of them and does all kinds of work. Right, so if you've got your system sitting between your you know, super awesome network with some servers and a workstation, you can set up rules in the firewall to say, hey, I don't want my servers talking to the outside world. All the stuff they do is for me inside, so they don't get to. But I want, you know, my workstation's on the same network, so we can just see them, talk to them. Yes.
Does it have to do with load balancing as well?
Yes, we're going to get right to that. Yes. All right, so I'm going to make another rule that's going to allow traffic to initiate from the workstation out to the internet to go, hey, I want to surf the web. And hey, you know, I decided I want to, like, run a web server to the public, to the outside world. I'm going to put a hole in my firewall on port 80. And there are 1.7 billion possibilities now for all kinds of interesting entropy. And so, you know, like, let's look at how to do this in PFSense. If you want to know more about how to do this stuff in, can everybody see this stuff pretty clearly? Okay. If you want more of an introduction for how to, if you want more of a more intro to PF, there's a lot of books, we're not going to focus on it. I'm going to have us look, this is the PFSense interface, right? We've got this browser thing. Okay, cool. So, basically we've got this interface to the PFSense box. It's coming off of this Soaker's box right here. Three states, 1,000, awesome. Okay, so I'm going to go over to firewall, check out the rules, and see that, whoa, for the LAN, there are absolutely no rules whatsoever. So no traffic is going to be able to come into LAN. And aha, by default, the LAN has got a default rule of any to any. So who wants to make a rule with me? George just volunteered. Thanks, George. Okay, so we're clicking the plus button here. Actions. Do you want this to do? Do you want this rule to block something from going out? This is from your internal network to the outside world.
Yes.
I'm just going to walk through this.
Block.
You want to block
PCP
what?
PCP-22.
I'm going to do this, too, while you're doing that. See, you want to TCP-22?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
So we're off. From the LAN interface, TCP, and you want the source to be anything from the LAN. Destination, you do not want to get to single host or alias.
64.1.7.1.9.
All right, so how about any? Right?
Any.
Okay.
I know that.
Okay. And say destination port range. Let's be really, you know, that's QR SSH. You can type in port 22 if you want.
Wait, SSH 22. I'm
running
online on 2.
I use 25. George, do you want to knock over the box by logging all the packets that are handled by this rule? That'll kill this little guy. Advanced options, simultaneous connection limits. These are some of the more common things you find in your configs for a PF firewall rule, right? So you can set simultaneous connection, client connection limit, maximum state entries per host, maximum new connections per second, state timeout in seconds. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool stuff. Is any of this complicated yet, by the way? Is anybody going, wow, that was hard? It's blowing my mind.
Awesome.
Wow. Say what? Okay, that's just the idea there. That's the point. That's definitely the point.
It's just like stupid. It's amazing.
Stupid. state type. You can screw around with different states. And if you're doing some CARP stuff, you can actually take one box to or another and say, don't do the CARP same dance with this rule. You can schedule rules. You got to go make schedules, right? But you can schedule rules to turn on and off for specific times. And you can give it a description.
Wasn't it actually, like, this is your question, but
George
is the schedule
take. Say what?
I wasn't a joke. I'm serious. Like, what format do the schedules take? You know, like, a lot of the scheduler programs that I take, like, iCal format. Outrageously complicated, hard to deal with.
It's good. You know what? I got to tell you, I made one with PFSense like 3 years ago. I haven't thought about it since. So
the config is all XML.
Well,
in iCal,
that's
XML. No, the actual config is XML, but chances are it's dumped out of cron.
I would think it is. I would think it is. Ooh, somebody put a drink here. I didn't notice it. Yes. Yes.
So. In terms of being able to save configurations, what are your options?
Saving configs for this whole thing?
Yeah, so once you've got this thing configured, usually like with like commercial brand box, you've got some ability to like save it off somewhere so you can restore it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, but.
Yeah. There are, okay, here's, two of you just asked that question, and it's going to get covered towards the end, so I'll just do it now.
Okay.
There are, I'm going to apply this change real quick so that the firewall rules now are being loaded. Hold on just one sec, and I'll answer that. See this backup restore tab? Backup area. Do I want to backup everything? Do I want to backup just one of these kind of big complicated things that I might want to clone to another box or something like that? I'm going to back everything up. You download it and ta-da! It's an XML file. And everybody's getting all excited here. And I'll open it up. But it's just an XML file. The restore happens via the same type of mechanism. There's a couple things about your config file that I'll mention right now while we're here on it. Things like system passwords are, you know, MD5 hashes, things like that. You kind of don't just want floating around. Things like your PPTV users, if you're using a PPTV roving VPN or something like that. Plain text passwords, all of them. Right, so there's some things that are like, well, what do we do with this? Is this something we should make easy, or is this something that we should try and secure? It seems like a lot of the choices that the PSN guys make is, if we're not going to be able to do this really, really, really well, let's just make it really, really simple so somebody else can deal with it really, really well, and it's at least transparent, and it's just admin looks at passwords and goes, ew, that's crazy, let's do something about that. When we store this in ransom, shuffle it off. Is it that answer?
Yeah. So I've got a quick follow-up. So what kind of things are stored in plain text? I can understand MD5, that makes sense. What's in plain text?
In particular, one thing that's always driven me nuts is, would be all of the passwords, usually password keys for key pairs. If you have passwords that you're storing locally on the box for PPTV, roving VPN connections.
So if you're using Windows, get screwed?
Yeah, basically. Unless you plug PGTP into Radius and use some kind of nice multi-factor auth thing, which there's all kinds of Radius things in this thing as well. So you can do some nice good stuff with it there.
Back to the rule bases. Are they processed top-down?
Yes. Yes, the rules are processed top-down. So everything, follows the exact same set of conventions that PF does.
That's not true.
Does it do any verification, like overshadowing of rules?
I'm sorry?
Does it do any verification for you as far as overshadowing of rules? Like your rule that you...
Oh, you mean like if you make a really dumb rule that's going to break another rule, that's going to do something funny to another rule and lock you out? Yeah, you're hosed. You got to be a grown up. You got to be a grown up. They don't really give you much space there not to.
Okay.
Right. So the there we go. Let me see. So they make things easy, but they do expect this to be. They expect you to really be.
Is that protection against DHCP starvation?
Ah, I'll get to that in a minute. I'll actually get to that in a minute. DHCP server, let's jump over to it. We're jumping all over the place here.
Quick question. Do you know if routing's done first or the firewall rules are done first?
It
depends, on whether it's WAN or LAN.
Yeah, this is going to depend on which network you're coming through. I believe the firewall rules, they get loaded before the routes, but it's going to depend on already contextually where the packet is as it's getting processed going through the rule sets. So if you have a bunch of WANs on like one of these boxes with a bunch of MICs, like the path going to be the rules are going to get evaluated on the NIC. You're going from one network on one NIC on this box to another. The rule's going to get evaluated first where it's coming from, then where it's going to, right?
In route.
Well, first where it's coming from,
I can
answer that. So if you look at the actual code that routes the packets through the kernel, which I am, you'll find that all the firewall rules, if anything that handles a packet, gets done before routing at this point. Routing is the absolute last thing.
Okay.
Because it's the best way to protect the system.
Yeah, that's what Checkpoint does. Juniper does routing first.
That's scary. They're not using our kernel to do the routing, so.
You mentioned bridging. Does it do bridging or no? Before it's a routing port.
Yeah, you can absolutely set up bridging. A lot of the networking features, though, you're basically hit and miss whether or not a specific other feature that you're using is going to be compatible with bridging or not. So let me get into that. That's definitely an after question. Yeah, one more, and then I'm going to go back to slides.
Everything we've talked about so far is IPv4, right? No V6?
That's in my wish list at the end. You can forward all IPv6 packets that hit an interface to another host somewhere in your network. So it's basically like, we can't do anything with this, so we're just going to shuffle it all. There's an active work being done by one of the VSN's developers that's been going on for like a year and a half to make everything IPv6 compatible. But the attitude of the developers is basically, we don't have many resources for this. We have so many other impacting projects to work on that are great, and that this isn't getting it. Definitely doesn't get the attention we would like it to. But then they secondarily are saying, we also don't want to release IPv6 things and say, oh yeah, three things kind of work with IPv6. And like, oh, the other stuff you expected to use? Yeah. Bitch feels stupid for buying that really, really nice Opus board. The, you know, like, whatevs. So their attitude is just basically to get it out the door properly. Did that answer your question?
I guess so.
Okay. Disappointing, yeah. Okay, so what do we let through these ports? I guess from George's rule, we let nothing through these ports. Right? So, looking at other things. So there's all this, rant I've been on since last summer, and a lot of people have been on it for a long time, like forever. Talking about the thing, and, you know, we thought earlier, we're saying, what do we let through our networks? Right? What is all this stuff? Not our big web, you know, web server, but all of this stuff that runs crazy Ajax apps inside of our network, right? It's heavily bolted down business network. You got a bunch of IP you're protecting, you got all this private network activity going on inside, you're locked down, and boop, somebody's hosed because they got a virus to Facebook, and, you know, now everything's out of control in your environment. This drives me nuts. Drives a lot of people nuts. Okay, two good talks, Social Zombies and Zombies 2, DEFCON and MUCON talks that go scarily into the topic. So coming back to DefSense, this is open source software. This is defensible stuff. It's all about creatively using whatever tools you have and making new ones. there's a smart package for the full hard drive install, which is pretty darn cool. You can also do all kinds of things, setting up other types of traffic filtering and IDS systems, and making all kinds of things to take signatures of traffic flows and start dealing with blocking, using PF to block traffic going in and out in an automated fashion.
Right?
You get signatures that look like, hey, you know what your company's supposed to be using Facebook from the internal network? You said it's evil. Hey, the traffic just drops off the network. Would it be that easy? Yeah, we got that all working and excited yet. But if anybody wants to do a talk on Snort, that's another one I'd love to hear. Yes?
How easy or hard is it to implement signatures into the instance?
Well, here's the deal. I don't have anything up here for you to try it with because none of these have a hard drive. Install it on the hard drive, install the package, and email a nice book talk list to tell us. It doesn't look too hard from what I saw in the tutorial and my experience in the online tutorials. They're all pretty short. They're all pretty well written. They all kind of feel like a common voice. Yes?
So I gather if you're going to install Snort, you also do a pretty high end box.
Exactly. You need to be not running on one of these SOAS boxes. However, if you're running, sorry to interrupt you. If you're running a Snort elsewhere, and you're doing netflow collections from traps, going down some other fun stuff, blah, 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 see no reason why you couldn't come up with some kind of RPC mechanism using SSH keys and something to actually just modify your rules. It's PF. It's not full product science. You can stitch, I mean, and this is Unix. You can stitch all kinds of things together, including like the gun that is pointed at your own door that you accidentally shoot yourself with. So, whatever.
The console table.
Yeah. So example multi-zone networks, right? I'm just going to cover this real quick. Also, another other ways of dealing with some of these threats, right? This is something I talked about before at length in other environments and implemented in many, many different ways. Hey, you got all these NICs on the thing. You can create all these VLANs also, even though I'm not real fond of VLANs. It's not fun because I know some people sitting over that way do a lot of really perverted stuff with them. And but, you know, like, so there's other ways of dealing with these problems. Like, all the people who have the Facebook machines, they get to live in this, I think of this bank vault idea all the time. You classically have, like, let me actually flip forward a slide so you get it. You have a DMZ, and you have, like, your trusted network. Well, your trusted network's got these machines of people doing stuff like Facebook. So I was kind of thinking of this, like, the design of a bank building. There's three zones. There's a bank vault, and bank vault, like, people going in and out, they have a log, there's an audit trail. We know how much, everybody in the bank knows how much money that person walked in with, how much they walked out with, what's going on. This is where everything's bolted down, big steel walls, guys with guns sitting somewhere by the door sleeping. This is the bank work area, like the area behind glass, the teller area. This is where all the activity really happens, right? So liability is now slightly reduced, and you got to focus more on what individuals are doing and pay a lot of attention in this zone to what's happening. Out in the ATM lobby area, people get mugged in ATM lobbies all the time. So this is analogous to, like, there's all these little teeny transactions and little teeny things that happen. So when one of these teeny things goes bad, it's not such a big deal, right? So, yeah.
I just want to ask quickly. Kind of always wondered this. So you got a single board computer, you can maybe get a 4-port. But the biggest server, like, I know they sell network cards that are 4-port. And how many PCI slots do you have? Like, how many,
I'll show you some. I'll show you some.
Cool.
Yes, we're going to get there. Sorry, we will get there. So everybody gets this basic idea, right, about designing around these problems. So you got all these tons and tons of different tools, different approaches. You can take different ideas about how to approach some of the problems that your organization faces and start using these tools in creative ways, right? And you start having a much more secureable network. So we're going to talk about high availability stuff, and then we'll get to that fun mornings. CARP. Okay, so CARP came from OpenBSD sister protocol, PFSync, right, that syncs the states of PF rule sets. PFSync syncs additional softwares as well. So to do a bunch of stuff with XML RPC synchronization across the machines, so not just PFSync, but like all kinds of other funky things. your VPN configuration settings, your DHCP configuration settings. You change it on the primary, you want that stuff to propagate so that fail over.
So right? Configuration.
And you can choose. Yeah, there's a configuration screen, and you can actually choose to say, ah, I don't want this to sync. I do want this to sync. Pretty granular.
Nice.
So I'm going to talk about CARP used in a router failover scenario where you have CARP here and here, and you can see between. This is a really old diagram. That's another. This is another really old diagram that I think is awesome. When the CARP stuff came out, everybody wanted to just marvel at that sort of thing.
Crazy is.
I got a long winter in Canada. The
a lot of meat.
The this is another thing I'm not going to cover tonight, but you can use CARP in load balance environments. It's tricky, but all right. So we want to do a fully redundant network. All the way down to the server. Most servers have two NICs on them. We want to take this out and make sure that every component between you and the person you're paying a ton of money to keep your stuff online is all completely redundant and failed over transparently. So typical provisioning for these things, HSRP, VRP, GLBP, these are all Cisco things. Cisco has a lot of the world. We'll see how PFSense does, but Cisco's everywhere, and these protocols are well documented in Wikipedia. So when you got to talk to your folks at the data center, you can go deal with I saw somebody hit their forehead. What? Comment?
Go on the Wikipedia for source of truth.
Enough to get your data center to give you what you need? Yes. Implementer,
the page system.
Implementation of other things. Yeah. Anyways, so you want redundancy from your ISP, I'm going to just show like HSRP. So you don't know what they're running. They're running magic boxes in the cloud, probably. And the wrong cloud. But so you got a virtual IP address, blah.1. And your ISP takes .2 and .3, and those are the actual physical boxes. And you just always route to .1, right? If you want to do uptime stats, you want to look at what's going where, you can look at .2 and .3. So .2 fails, the virtual IP goes flipping over to the other side. And so if you look at this in CARP connectivity kind of diagram, those are those two routers, right? The ISPs, redundant routers. These are your PFSense boxes. These are your servers. I'll leave the switching out of this. So your IPs are sitting over on this side where the little blue dot just showed up. Boom, they failed. Your IPs flip over to the other side, and your network, including the MAC address that these machines think they're talking to, all the way up the chain and routing all this stuff, just flips over to the other side. It's real slick. Hey, it's back up. Now the other side died. Hey, it's back up. Okay, so you get the idea here. Does anybody have any kind of questions about that field? Yes.
So that's good for things like email, web browsing, whatever, but does it affect...
Routing? At this point, we're not running servers.
Or things like IRC connections?
Yes, start your questions. State is not preserved. Your state... goes away. You got a database connection, gone. You got a SSH connection, gone. State.
Actually, I've seen SSH stay up through it.
SSH.
You have to understand TCP. It's all SYN numbers, right? SYN numbers are host to host. That's nothing to do with internal.
Well, that's what the synchronization is for.
Yeah, SSH is actually the bane of a lot of my problems because I work with developers a lot, and SSH is a work of art that belongs like in a crypt somewhere, you know, like just started like in a museum maybe. It's terrific. The crypt doesn't work. Open SSH is so resilient to so many different things that it can really go a long way towards helping you misdiagnose network problems. And if you have room for developers who are doing things, it's not like fault. It's really good. It's a great protocol. And it's a great implementation of.
I didn't lose my SSH protocol connection. What are you talking about?
Right.
It's the same as TCP. Literally just SYN right to that point.
Well, I was just wondering if you were going to tell me how my customer who runs an IRC server behind our CARP environment how we can keep them from falling off the network every time we fail over to our secondary firewall.
Have a higher refresh interval, and the things will work better.
Have a higher refresh interval
on your ARP. The problem ultimately is that you send a packet somewhere, the packet doesn't get received, and then on the other end, when it finally does fail over, the retransmission doesn't work as expected. And ultimately, that's a failure of TCP, IRC, SSH, not anything. You're going to notice this more in VoIP than anything, specifically because VoIP is very sensitive to timeline. So you can't deal with like a half second of VoIP connection dropping out while ARP refreshes itself.
Got it. Okay.
All right.
I wanted some action. No, I won't say it tonight. Does anybody have any other questions, though, about this particular type of setup? Okay, so moving through, typical other thing that I've done is set up jail virtual machines so many can do it half conventional once. The in redundant configuration as well, so basically you have
lives.
Jail host, say what?
Lives.
So, you have jailed hosts that you can basically any component that you own now can fail, and you have some mechanism to very speedily recover from it.
So you have like not out of the lot of the RFC 1918 addresses in the jails, DSX in front of it.
Well, and also the what is it? Pavel just posted this that new high availability disk beyond thing. Anybody? What was it called? He posted that.
Past.
That looks cool. So anyways, yes,
question. Pulse, not your set Pulse. You mentioned jails and DSX.
Yeah.
Do you know if anybody has any logs from running DSX inside of a jail, inside of, say,
no.
The virtual networking?
I don't believe so. Well, it won't run inside of jail. The virtual networking stack in FreeBSD 8, God, I really don't know. And
you're talking about
they gave out a VMware appliance that
was a virtualization system and like separate them. I mean, sorry.
Yeah, they gave out a VMware appliance that's useful in particular contexts. But like realistically, like
The base install, the full install of DSX isn't going to give you the capability to actually do an install of jails. So that's where you can.
Are you talking about jail inside of PFSense, or are you talking about PFSense inside it as a jail service?
That
just sounds evil. I don't know. Yeah, I see somebody waving their arm.
Yeah, no, that's
there is a proprietary
thing.
Yeah. Because your firewall is in the kernel, and your jail doesn't really have access to the kernel.
Right.
There's a lot of changes actually facilitated, but the problem isn't even like about jails and so on or about the IP stack. It's actually about you have a FreeBSD distro that's meant for a certain purpose, then you have an operating system. I mean, you're trying to like,
you want to reach
them with some separate boxes.
Everything is do it and post and talk. Okay, so like let's drop this. No, really.
Okay.
I've dropped a lot of these things all over town, and they haven't just all been in offices and under kitchen sinks. The so you're running a small data center operation. You've got 100 meg connection to the internet. That's a 95% on billing. You're actually paying for 1 meg a month. And you're pushing less than that. Boy, what a great tool to drop in. You deploy these fast. All right, so this is another environment where we're dropped in. And this is going to get really exciting in a minute. I'm just going to point some stuff out. These are really, really heavily loaded. We've got a TLS Metro Ethernet connection going live across one of these. It's going to Office. We've got also a failover VPN connection, and then a VPN connect. Oh, and that TLS connection is running a VPN. There's a VPN. We've got another. It's like VPN. The TLS connections suck so bad that basically, like, all that crypto didn't really hurt these little guys.
VPN terminated there. Or is it behind it?
VPN terminated here. Two of them. Two IPsec tunnels. Let me see, we're running two separate DMZs because Also, how can I put it? You can set up. Basically, we had performance considerations of one of these DMZs for a specific application that could hose the whole network, and so we had a special set of filter rules in place for it and the others and how all the networks interacted with each other. And they had a couple of different network zones, and it was all awful complicated, and these things held up like a champ and worked really well. That orange loopy cable, that's the PFSync cable, that's the crossover cable. So that ostensibly is the single point of failure, and it's a pretty simple thing to not have fail. Yeah, in back.
What was your total throughput on those two lines?
Estimated reality. We had stuff in the charts which I didn't quite believe, where we saw spikes that hit 60 megabit for seconds, all HTTP traffic, and all real plain and simple. Yes?
Right now, 10 to 20 megabit.
Right now, 10 to 20 megabit. Okay, awesome. I'm going to show that. Yeah.
Are those his?
They are now. Yes. Well, actually, these ones are not. But no, realistically, like with in the other DMZ with like public with well-known public-facing website and some other things, we're talking more rule sets, more complexity, 10, 12 megabit pushing it. But we really weren't pushing that much internet basic traffic, and we explicitly did not want these highly performative, designed to be very performative gigabit networks, switch networks inside of each of these network zones. So the machines inside were real chatty, these cluster applications, and we didn't really want them talking to each other much. So the bandwidth in between didn't matter to us so much. Yes?
Can you do a secondary sync?
A secondary sync, meaning?
Redundant sync cables?
Redundant sync.
What does that mean?
Yes. I'm sure you could.
At one point of failure,
it sounds
redundant system. It's not redundant anymore, technically.
Okay.
You have a secondary sync interface.
Yeah, I think, to be really honest,
two sync interfaces. Oh, sorry.
Just on one, just between the two devices, I think that would create more complexity, personally, than that's for the PF lists, actually. That's where people will have done it.
You have multiple plate of mediums to actually do syncing. Does PFSense actually provide the interfaces to manage those?
Yeah, if it comes up as a network interface that's recognized by FreeBSD,
it can be used
as a sync interface. You got it. And also, that sync interface doesn't have to be a cross connect. That can actually be a network and hit a bunch of switches, and you can have a whole bunch of PF machines that all fail over and also can do load balancing without a load balancer. But that's a different Miguelet. I'm gonna flip through this for a second real fast. These are the switches that they were connected to. Dumb switches, cheap switches, my favorite. Stuff you can't stack really well, stuff that's inexpensive, and stuff that easily replaced and also cheap and great performance. So here's, kind of this whole roundabout picture of that end of the network. And then I started doing some work with that guy sitting in the back over there. And we started replacing these boxes, pulled out all this cabling that had been in place. Ooh, the whole network's still live, by the way, through all these pictures, everything up. We yanked out and taken down the primary. Certainly taped it up to organize the cables.
My cabinet.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Here we go. Oh boy. Now we got scary hell going on. Oh boy. Now there's this big thing going into this place. Suddenly, now you can't quite see it in this picture because it's covering all the cables. There's another one of these that we failed over to in the last slide that's running through the network now. We took the XML config file. You were there. I have a witness. We took the XML config file, loaded it up in the text editor, and went, EM, VR. Right. So change all the VRs to EM and load it, and let's see how well this does. Hey, quicker. Everything's up. Let's start testing it. That was how hard it was. SMB kernels. That's big fun. And, basically about 30 minutes later, it looked like this again. And the entire network was up the whole time. Everybody lost their socket connections, or didn't, but the whole network was up the whole time. And you know, not a peep from any of the monitors out in the outside world, not a peep from any of the clients monitoring some of our applications in these fancy DMZs. Everything kosher cool. The only suck about these, the only really, really evil thing is that I left that man with a bunch of IGB NICs sitting right there. So, you know, ask him afterwards how they're working out this week. But so you were asking about other boxes with more NICs. All right, this is on my wish list at the end of the talk. I want 48 gigabit NICs in a box with two, you know, cheap quad core Intel CPUs. Somebody know anybody who can make some of those?
Is that a
pitch? Yeah, I also would like. So I
love they're called switch vendors.
Yeah.
Really?
Say what? Well, here's the deal, actually. Okay. I see your point. Here's the deal. This whole kit, $2,000 to $3,000, depending on how much stuff you put into it, this whole big monster box with fast CPUs and tons of memory and all configured and tested and all that kind of jazz and big hard drives, two of them, all this other fun stuff, it's really, really, really cheap. It's really easy to also swing this kind of hardware back into the rest of the organization as a server. So when I come down to like, okay, switch, the other thing about all the switches, I'm not running an open source Unix that I don't.
They're running Linux. Right.
Which open season on vendors? Can you?
I mean, all of them run. They're all running the same processor. They're all running their own random version of Linux. Ghost pick one off the list. They're all doing the same thing. So the big
thing is there anyone around, way, around here that has good trash tapes?
Yeah, on the West Coast, you like to fly out there. But the big problem you're going to have if you want to do this. If you want to do this at 10 gig, is that you're not going to have enough power to run the NICs. So each one of those NICs is something like a watt, just to be on. And then you start powering it, and you've got like 10 watts per port.
Wow.
And also, what about the backplane? Will the backplane of PCI really support a mesh 48,
28 through? No. That's why they built their own switching chips.
Yeah.
Right.
So why don't you like the IGB? What's your issue?
Get that.
Oh, 7.2. Okay, got it. IGB, I'm 7.2, which, again, pfSense is a release engineering project more than an engineering project. Basically, the IGB driver didn't really exist for the cards that I ended up getting, these very low profile Intel cards that fit into this 2U chassis.
It's a one-line change.
Say what?
It's a one-line change.
What is it?
It's just that the GPS ID for that driver for the it's a quad port card.
Quad port.
Yeah,
low profile.
Email one of us.
Awesome.
Okay. Send an invoice for this.
I'll say yeah.
Hey.
Hold my invoice. Just send us an email.
All right. So yeah, I'll get. Yeah.
The quality of the IGB driver is higher now than the quality of the M driver because Intel is focused more on it.
Well, and also the hardware does when it's not broken. And the hardware does support both issues and stuff. So
that's difference.
At some point, it'll be more useful because they can do better. They can scatter traffic across CPUs and stuff.
Mantis is reading looked awesome compared to EM, but okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Bunch of guilt off my shoulders.
Not yet.
Yeah. Sorry. What are we doing? Okay, so fully redundant load balancing. I'm just going to show quick pictures, and we're going to get to like just playtime questions, having more fun. You can do load balancing in two fashions. Again, setting it up where you got multi-WAN failover. You set up two WAN links. You set up your load balancing. You can either have a primary failover, you can do a round robin. There's some tricky algorithms which seem awful complicated unless you're doing bigger and more interesting things.
Harder to troubleshoot.
And hard to deal with. let me see, you can also do server load balancing quite simply, right? So you're bringing from your network connection everything through your router, and you're load balancing your socket connections. You get the idea. Bing, 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 bing. You can mix and match all these ideas, right? Run this. Works really well. You end up running load balancing across CARPs routers, right? So you've got failover routers, all CARPs and cute and nice. You get your load balancing, and then boop, oh, something happened. It flipped over to the other side. You get the idea, right?
Well, yes. So,
all right.
The load balancing that you're talking about, it. So, I mean, like, coming at it from my perspective, I look at something like HAProxy as a load balancer, right?
Okay, got it.
You are talking about, I assume, in a more generic sense, where it's TCP-based load balancing.
Yes, indeed.
If TCP. I'm on the LAN, and I'm not using something like Zebra to broadcast ISIS or BGP or whatever,
yep.
Then how does the IP-based load balancing work from the pfSense firewall perspective?
Got it. Okay, so you end up configuring the load balancing to take a external IP and take through to a bunch. If you're doing, are you talking about this model of server
load
balancing?
Well, like at the LAN level, if I have a number of different machines that can all satisfy a number of different protocols, let's say HTTP versus SMTP.
Yep.
How, I mean, like, at least in the case of HTTP, I can't just take a single, I can't just load balance arbitrary packets from the pfSense firewall and send them to any machine within the round robin queue. I have to be able to send them to one machine because those packets can be quite large. In fact, if we're talking about like SCTP, where it has like a concept of
I'm not going to be able to even comment on SCTP. I'm not.
But like, if you have a concept of like content length, you know, like an HTTP.
Yes.
And so I have a content length. It's over your MTU.
To my knowledge, just for setting it up, and I don't know if I can answer your question completely, and I can do my best to look some of this up, but at the end of the day, it looks like it's socket-based, right? Not necessarily
connection-based.
Yeah, it's connection-based. Yeah.
But like at the LAN level, right, everything's stateful. You have to have state at the LAN level. At the firewall level,
state between them.
At the firewall level, there's not necessarily state unless you're synchronizing state based upon SIN numbers, receiver, and destination.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Any decent firewall?
Okay.
So can you repeat that again from the back?
Yes. In load balancer speak, that would be persistent connections.
Okay.
Does it have persistent connections, or is every packet round robin?
Got it. Persistent connections. All right. And you take your connections and make your connections function as round robin. You can make your connections also function fail over. Based on sensitive network conditions, you can also take and start getting involved with some algorithms that I have not messed around with that are part of the box as well. They seem to be useful. They start judging the next host to hit based on the number of socket connections that other hosts maintain. That's computationally expensive, right? So you're gonna have to do a reason to start getting into that. Is that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Sure.
If you're on the LAN side. Doing this, does it support like NAT reflection and everything for this? Or
a good question, is that?
Would you just go straight to the local box, whatever, but can you hit an external IP from internal and then get a load balance?
No. Your connection is going to stick. I see what you're saying. No, that would be awful actually for most applications. So basically what you're saying is, you know, socket connections initiated from this box, goes out, hits it, comes back, and boop, gets thrown over, response gets thrown over here. No, that'd be awful.
Yeah, well, because that's kind of common. Like, if one of those servers is serving like www.mysite.com, and you go to www.mysite.com, if you can't do that, you just kind of get a, you know, it doesn't wrap because you can't come back in. And that's, I don't know how, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your server whatever site just doesn't know it is. You know, that traffic would have to go out through the firewall and then come back down.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, these are the paths that you're actually going to take, and the scenario where I set this up, it was a website, real straightforward. And if that connection were to be initiated from here, it would be randomly, it would go back up to the PF machine, it would figure out where that external IP address that, you know, www.something.com is resolving to, and come to it on its outside interface. And from there, yeah, it could get load balanced to any of these machines, including itself.
It should,
right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Isn't that part of isn't there NAT reflection or something like that? Isn't that how that, maybe I'm not understanding that. I saw it in the book.
So we have a good, keep talking for a second. I don't know how to answer that.
All right.
So let's talk about it after. Sorry.
The feature I have turned off on mine, I'm kind of afraid to turn it on.
Oh.
So I was hoping you were...
Boy, you've got a couple up here for you to try it on before you leave tonight.
The advice is don't check that box.
Okay. We can turn your configs into a drinking machine.
Out of pure curiosity, can I run... I assume I can, but I can run something AJ Proxy on the PFN's box itself.
Ooh, I'll get there. Yep. Okay, so we talked about this stuff. How many people? Well, I want to ask that. How many people have removed this particular brand of stuff? Yes, awesome. So it takes a lot for a sonic wall to do anything close to any of this stuff inexpensively, simply, and in a language that just anybody who's familiar with networking understands.
Piece of crap.
Yes, indeed. and let's see here. Config management, here we are, downloadable XML file. That's it, really. It is accessible from the shell. Now, note, when you're running on the embedded systems,
this spell check.
spells, yeah, I was going to say spells not loaded. There's no compiler, there sure isn't spell. So basically you can get at the config file from the shell. You can actually get at lots of things. On the embedded platform, this is real frustrating until you find the commands, the shell scripts that take your read-only file systems, unmount them real quick, mount them, rewrite, so that you can now do some stuff to them, and then when you're done, you call the scripts to reverse that process. So the embedded platform runs most of the file systems as a read-only file system, the whole CF card, and takes everything that it writes to, logs, it generates pretty RD graphs and all kinds of other neat stuff you can do with it. That's all written to memory disks, right, on the machine, which is pretty nifty. You pull the plug, boop, all your logs are gone. So you can syslog out, you can do all kinds of other things to deal with that. So here's, look, I'm going to come back to this. Here's a bunch of stuff, we're getting antsy, and everybody thank you for staying this late, and you can come up and start screwing with these things if you'd like to. You can come up and, razz me for other things if you want to, but here's a bunch of stuff that it also does that's really, really terrific, and that comes in really handy all the time. Like, hey, you're in your office and you're dealing with all kinds of IP, and a bunch of people suddenly, when Google comes out with their DNS service, go, hey, you know what? This is awesome. Go, no. They're a stated competitor. We don't want them to know what our serving habits are like in the office. Oh, cool. I'm just going to take the names of the new name servers, and I'm going to actually just take them, do basically DNS hijacking at the routers, the DNS mask, where is the DNS mask thing? Somewhere in there. Yeah, down the corner. DNS mask, and ta-da, actually, you're going to go talk to our data servers. You should probably be talking to them. Start doing all kinds of interesting things like that. Hey, I have a weird thing suddenly coming from all these Windows hosts that's going to all these names, right? You can start doing some very interesting, quick stuff with this. Near future, okay, so FreeBSD PFSense near future, 8X coming soon. Let me see, IPv6, as we talked about earlier, slow work in progress. LTCP roving and roving VPN in the next release, which I didn't talk much about those, but it's not really, it's what it is. And this is more about the future that I wanted. you could run, what was the load balancer, Brian, that you were asking about?
HA proxy.
All right. So you want to run an HA proxy, especially on the full install. Just the whole previous daemon, previous system.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a compiler, doesn't have a bunch of other stuff that are like driving us. You got it. So you can install anything you want, use at your own risk. Something I would actually like to see after reading more about it and starting to screw around configuring with it, is I want to see a Nginx pound global load balancer plugin. That would be really awesome. I mean, you could totally blow away these F5 big IP products and stuff like that. Everybody's got all kinds of different applications that you'd want to see loaded up on this stuff. Maybe screw with this, you might like it, you might not, but it's a pretty cool platform, says me. Demo time, and that is up front, but first, give sense to the book. All right, so I have one copy to give away, and also then, do you want to give away something? Which ones? Yeah. The Art of Unix Programming, ESR's book. Well, first off, who would promise to do on the ESR book, do a review? Like, promise. Like, really promise. Yeah, I thought so. Got it. Okay.
What is that book about?
What is this book about?
The title.
Oh, yeah. The Art of Unix Programming. Oh, Eric Raymond. And here's
one of the
people gave it to
overviews of development of Unix open source development.
Think you want a one paragraph review?
We're covered by the book.
All right, quick a lot. I'm talked out. A good.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I will do a review on that book and
get it. Got it.
ESR?
Yeah.
Good. Done.
Easy okay. Program.
How should we go about this one?
Why don't you give them a quiz question?
Can you think one more time?
Current VFSense is based on which previous release?
Okay. I'm gonna ask a trick question. Why are the VFSense developers such staunch and ardent previous D fanatics?
If I answer that question, do I have to give the review?
Yes.
If you answer that question, do you really need that book?
Yeah. Hey! Good question. Yeah. You know, that was awesome. Yeah.
Does anybody want to know the answer?
All right.
I'll read the review.
Yeah. Okay, special thanks real quick. That's Chris Buechler. That's Scott Ulrich. These are the two guys who started this whole project. There's about 14 developers working on the project now. Chris, thanks to these guys.
We host their main theater.
Oh, come up here and hold screw with it. I'll show you. The HTTP server on this is really configurable and really dope. Is that kosher? Yes, indeed. And then also thanks to my awesome new employer, my awesome former employer, which was the website. Both these places are hiring developers, by the way. And then why I said we wouldn't be plugging like vendors, right? Because we don't do that at Nicebug, because blah. But these guys are a PSN's mirror, which is really awesome, and they're locals. And whatever. So thanks.
No problem.
And also Nicebug and lots of other things. And this talk is dedicated to every system. Right. two best role models are. Yeah. And that's it. That's the talk. So let's get the lights on and come up here.